Tech Talks Live on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm Stephen Lamp, and with me is Hannah Schneller. We are seniors at Skyline High School and St. Vrain Valley Schools, and your hosts for tonight's Tech Talks Live. We have a special guest with us in studio, Lauren Rieger with Ocean First Institute here in Boulder, Colorado. Our format for tonight is to share our conversation with Lauren and then take your calls throughout the show. Lauren, thanks for joining us tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Ocean First Institute.
Yes, so I'm the Director of Outreach with Ocean First Institute, and I'm a marine conservation biologist. So at Ocean First, I run all of our outreach programs, and I help design new curriculum for all of the programs.
So what do conservation biologists do necessarily?
No, that's a really good question. So conservation biologists, basically the study of protecting our natural world. So that could be looking at an entire population, an entire species, could be looking at an entire ecosystem. It could even be looking at the preserving the genetics of a species. So it's a variety of different things, but all different aspects of saving and protecting our natural world.
Okay, cool.
So what kind of got you into conservation biology? What made it so interesting to you?
So it's sort of a long story, you know. My path that got me here, it wasn't, you know, this direct line that led me from A to B. There were a lot of steps involved, but ever since I was little, I loved the natural world. I loved being outside. I loved everything from spiders to snakes, I mean, you name it. I was always fascinated by the natural world and biology in particular. I knew since I was little I was going to be a scientist. So going into college, I knew I was going to do biology. And I think when I first started thinking about working in the field and starting doing conservation, it was actually a job that I had over at Badlands National Park. So I've done various internships and jobs throughout my career, and I actually got to do invasive species research in South Dakota, of all places. So I've been able to travel a lot, and actually being outdoors, seeing bison for the first time. It was my first time seeing a prairie dog, if you can believe that. They're everywhere here, but growing up in Texas, I wasn't used to that sort of thing. But spending 10 hours a day outside in 100-degree weather, you know, could be raining the whole day, and I just fell in love with everything there was to do with studying the outdoors and studying the world around us and sort of trying to learn about how we can protect it from some of the things that we've maybe caused to our environment. And I think when I finally sort of sealed the deal for me was actually studying abroad in Costa Rica when I was in college. I always encourage everybody to study abroad in college. It's one of the most amazing experiences and kind of a unique experience to be able to just pick up everything and leave for a while and live in a foreign country. And I lived in Costa Rica for a semester, and I actually got to see this pristine, beautiful rainforest, you know, untouched by humankind. And I got to do some research on fruit bats, of all things, but, you know, got woken up by howler monkeys in the mornings and got to take walks to waterfalls. And it was just one of the most amazing experiences. And I knew it changed me after being there for months and being around all these incredible scientists. I knew after that this is what I want to do. I want to protect our planet. And so it's kind of ever since then, there's been a lot of unique steps since then, but I knew that kind of put me on this path towards the conservation world.
And was there a specific experience that got you interested in ocean conservation, or?
Yes, so growing up in Texas, I got to experience visiting the ocean on a pretty regular basis. So I got to spend a lot of weekends and summers out visiting the ocean, and fell in love with the ocean at a very, very young age. So it was
a very...
Sorry
about that. We're having technical issues here. I was always fascinated by the natural world, but the ocean in particular kind of had a... It sort of drew me to it in a way. I still remember as a young child seeing a manatee for the very first time. I remember exactly how it was eating and moving. And they may not seem like the most exciting of animals, this floating potato in the water. But I was just amazed that this was an animal actually in existence in our world. And it just sort of got me thinking at a very young age, what else is down there? And I think the ocean kind of has this sense of wonder, and there's still so much of it left for us to explore. And I think I started to appreciate that at a very young age, you know, seeing an animal like a manatee. And I was very fortunate, like I said, growing up in Texas, being able to visit the ocean quite a bit, and also visiting Florida on a fairly regular basis. And I was really lucky after I finished my undergrad, spending about 8 years in Florida doing a lot of research there. You kind of can't escape the marine world living in Florida. And I was really lucky I got to do work with sea turtles and horseshoe crabs and even some marine wildlife rehabilitation. So I've always been drawn to the ocean world. I've done a lot of work with various other things, but I always knew that I was going to end up doing ocean work from pretty young age.
You really, really like oceans. So we are in Colorado, and you do know that that is a landlocked state.
Yes, yes.
Why did you choose Colorado of all places?
So a lot of people are always surprised that the Ocean First Institute is in Boulder, of all places. It does seem really strange. You know, the ocean's a little far from here. But what we tell people that we work with and students that we teach is that the ocean kind of starts here in the mountains. And it starts here with us. And we're all impacted by the ocean, no matter where we live. I mean, the ocean provides most of the oxygen that we breathe. A lot of people don't realize that. And it impacts our climate. It provides a lot of food for the world. And we can impact the ocean even from here in Colorado. As I said, you know, water from the mountains can end up in our ocean. So it's really important for us to realize that we are part of this larger community, and that we can not just impact other people within our city or people downstream from us, but we can even impact the ocean from here, even in Colorado. But it does seem crazy ending up here. Like I said, I did all of my studies in Texas and Florida, but actually love brought me out here to Colorado, of all things. So my now fiancé, I got a dream job offer, and I admit I was nervous coming out here in Colorado. It's the most beautiful state. I have fallen in love, but was concerned I didn't know what would happen to me or what would happen with my career. And I cannot tell you how happy and just excited I've been to find this ocean community here in Colorado. It's been unbelievable, and been just so fortunate to meet the incredible people I have, and so happy that I work for Ocean First Institute. I love it, and it's crazy, but I love it.
It's awesome.
And so with that, can you tell us a little bit about what Ocean First Institute does and how their work kind of spreads throughout the country?
Yes, absolutely. So Ocean First Institute is an ocean conservation nonprofit, and we protect the ocean in two different ways. We have a research side to our nonprofit, and then we also do a lot of education work. So conservation starts with education, right? And our research is a smaller part of what we do, being here in landlocked Colorado. We've been really fortunate to partner with some incredible organizations around the world to actually travel to coastal areas like Belize, Costa Rica, and actually work with other organizations and nonprofits to do research. So we do a lot of work with sharks in particular. Our executive director, Dr. Mickey McComb-Cobza, is a shark biologist. So we do quite a bit of work with them. She specializes in hammerhead sharks. And we have worked with sea turtles, manatees, even doing general fish surveys. And a big part of our research, we also bring students with us So everything we do, there's an education component. So just this past year, Dr. Mickey was in a cage off the coast of Mexico with great white sharks and was able to do a live webinar with students in the United States and actually show the sharks swimming around while she's in the cage studying them. And we also do youth expeditions where students come with us and they actually get to do those fish surveys and see how marine biologists do this work in the field. So that's a big part of what we do, is that education component. And here in Colorado, we have a lot of local school programs. So we'll actually go in and visit schools. It's one of my favorite things that I get to do as, talk about these incredible animals with students of all ages. And we also started a conservation program this past year called the Ocean First Explorers Club, which is something very near and dear to my heart as a conservation biologist. I think it's so important to not just raise awareness, but to teach individuals, and especially our youth, that they can do something about all of these issues that they see today and that they have a voice. So this program teaches them about some of the issues facing our ocean today, things like climate change, marine pollution, invasive species, but then teaches them how they can do something about it. You know, every little bit helps. Everything adds up. And we also do local conservation projects within the local community to kind of teach people that we are connected to the ocean and that things that we do right here in Colorado to benefit our community and to benefit the environment can also help our planet as a whole and help our ocean.
So trying to go over maybe towards, we've run a segment before called Tech Talks, and we like to focus on the technology. You were talking about this class where you could, I guess, would you use something like, if you've ever heard of Skype, use that to transmit the sharks and stuff for education is like that. How do you guys do that?
Absolutely. So one of our really big education programs that I forgot to mention before, we do virtual outreach. We've been doing this for 2 years now. And actually last year, we reached over 80,000 students with our virtual outreach program. And this is completely free to students and teachers over the world.
Is it online or
yes.
Is it?
So we've used Skype before, and we've recently started using the Zoom platform.
Okay.
I don't know if you've used that before, but it's been really incredible. We can actually have multiple classrooms at one time, and we can talk with them and share videos, share shark jaws with them, and have them ask questions directly, ask live to a marine biologist. And it's been really, really fun. The students respond so well to it, and it's been a really neat experience. So all of our presentations are related to sharks and how we can protect sharks. And I think one of the most incredible talks that I did was actually with a school in Hong Kong, and we were talking about shark fin soup. So it was a pretty interesting experience actually talking with students who had family members that had eaten it, and they were genuinely interested in trying to understand, well, why would this be an issue? So having that conversation and having a direct impact was really incredible. And that group of students actually started a campaign afterwards within their school and their local community to teach people about why shark fin soup is harmful to shark populations. So that was just one class out of the many that we've spoken to over the years. And it's something that Dr. Mickey and I really enjoy doing.
That's really cool. Do you guys focus, like, what type of marine life do you guys focus on? Because you have a lot of education programs, I guess, around the sharks and stuff, but is it very focused towards a species, or is it more diverse?
No, so we talk about a variety of species and ecosystems. So the sharks, especially with our virtual outreach, is a little heavy there, obviously, because of the research that we do, because we can pull upon the research that we're actually conducting, show a scientist in the water in a cage with great white sharks there, show video of us tagging sharks and diving with them. So that's really impactful for students to be able to see. But we have experience with a lot of different marine life. So we do programs on everything from sea turtles to coral to polar bears. And there's really just an unlimited amount of things that we do. And like I said, when we talk about some of the conservation issues like climate change, we try to tell that through tell the story through an animal to kind of make it more fun and make that story kind of come to life and help them really connect to that issue and see how it is impacting marine life in our ocean today.
That definitely helps the education too.
Absolutely. I mean,
thinking about it, it's hard to grasp a concept like climate change, as far as if you're, you know, even like a fourth or a fifth grader, you know, they have an idea, but if you can, that's a really cool way that you guys do that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you're learning about something like sea level rise, we make it almost more fun when we talk about it from the perspective of a polar bear. And that's also something else that's really important to us, is that we make this a really positive experience. When you're talking about some of these issues today, it can get really overwhelming. It can be really depressing. I mean, these are complex global issues facing us today. So we make it really positive, and it's all about empowering them and really showing them that, yes, these things are happening, but what can we do about it? So we always end it on a hopeful note and show them and share really positive stories about what's happening in the local community, what's happening around the world, that are people that are trying to make a difference, so that they really feel that push to do something about it.
And have you guys worked more with students living in coastal areas or people living inland as well? I mean, what challenges does that present in trying to teach the different concepts to people who may have never even seen the ocean before?
Absolutely. No, our local conservation projects obviously are all students that are in landlocked states. So when we're doing these conservation programs, our Ocean First Explorers Club, a big part of that is trying to bring the ocean to them. So when we can show them an actual set of shark jaws, it makes them really come to life. They can actually see how big it is and feel it in their hands, and those sorts of things that we can try to do to make it as fun as possible and really immerse them into these subjects. One of our really popular ones is using the VR headsets and actually do a virtual scuba dive. Whenever we do that with kids, they don't ever want to stop. They love it. That's kind of a neat experience. So there are really unique ways that we can try to bring the ocean to the students. Another one of my favorites are actually when we teach about marine pollution, we dissect albatross boluses. So those are the really large seabirds, and what they do with the material that they can't digest, they actually regurgitate it, similar to an owl pellet. So the students can actually, we've been able to get real albatross boluses for them to handle and see, and they smell fishy and they're messy. But it's a really neat way for them to see like those actual squid beaks inside it, you know, and be able to handle that, but also have that lesson of, okay, but there's also rope and there's netting and pieces of plastic in here. So it's sort of an interesting, less kind of depressing way to bring about these subjects. But like I said, also try to find some unique way to bring the ocean to Colorado.
Yeah. So to talk, maybe go back to you a little bit, what are some current projects that you are doing on OFI? I mean, you talked about the education and stuff, but like you personally.
Yes, so we're constantly trying to expand our programming. And for our Ocean First Explorers Club, we recently expanded into high schools. So that's been really exciting for us to be able to reach older students. And they've been developing local conservation projects right here in Colorado. So that's been really exciting. They're student-led. So we kind of mentor and guide them and help them through the process. So we have a couple schools in Longmont right now that are working on reducing energy use within their school and also looking into ways that we can reduce pollution for local watersheds. So it's really incredible to be able to see these students kind of take this leadership role and realize they have a voice. It's been a lot of fun for me. And we also have a few research projects that we're working on. Later this year, we're going to be doing some more work with scalloped hammerheads. So that's something that Dr. Mickey, she's been working with that species for many years now and working with an organization in Costa Rica called Mission Tiburon. And they work with sharks in the area. And they're actually going to be tagging some sharks later this summer. And their ultimate goal is to establish a sanctuary off the coast of Costa Rica, because they believe that this is a nursery area for this particular species that's endangered. So that's a pretty exciting project that we've been working on for many years, and we're excited to continue that project.
Cool.
How does the tagging work? Like, how do you tag a shark?
Yes. So sometimes that can be challenging. So a lot of the sharks that they actually tag, because this is a nursery area, they're going to be juveniles or smaller sharks. But they're able to kind of capture them and get them onto the boat by flipping them upside down. They actually go into kind of a trance-like state, and they do something called acoustic telemetry. So they have a small tracker that they can actually, they make an incision into the belly of the shark, put the tracker inside, close them up. It's a very, very small incision. The tag is about the size of a lipstick case.
It's not harmful to the shark.
No, no. So they make sure to use antibiotics. The whole process is done in under 2 minutes. So it's a really quick thing that they can do, and it's really important information that we're able to get from this. And we actually, the organization that we work with, they have about a dozen of these receivers underwater, so we can constantly monitor the location of these animals and see where are the juveniles going and where are the sharks spending a lot of their time.
So on other, have you guys worked with other projects like this and other tagging projects, or is this kind of the first one that's you guys have really worked on?
No, so we have done some tagging before, and that's how we kind of figured out that this was a potential nursery area. It was because of previous tags that we had put in and research that's been done in this area. We've been working with Mission Tiburon for several years now, so this is just a continuation of this research and just trying to get more information so that way we can have as strong a defense as possible for this sanctuary designation.
So you guys are doing all this really cool stuff, and some of it, I think, like the tagging, how long has the tagging process been around, like just for tagging sharks and stuff?
It's been around for a very long time. We've definitely made some advances in tagging. Unfortunately, some of the stuff like satellite tags, they're still very expensive.
Right.
So I think that's kind of what slows us down a bit there. You know, we hope going in the future that those will get cheaper and more affordable for scientists trying to do this work. But there's been a lot of different types of tags out there that we've been able to use, you know, satellite tags being one of them, and then the acoustic telemetry is one that's been really successful for this particular project that we've been doing.
Do you think that some technology that's been coming in, I mean, we've had tags for a while, but you were talking about like the virtual reality and all of this stuff. I mean, we probably can't even imagine what's going to be out there in 10, 20 years, but how much has this been impacting you as far as what you're trying to do, not only both in your personal research, but as the education front, too?
Well, some of the things that have been really interesting for us, especially in the education world, is because of the tagging that is out there, you can actually follow sharks. You can actually follow sea turtles online now. So classrooms can see an animal and they give it a name. Some of them even have Twitter accounts that you can follow and actually see where this great white shark is today and then where they're traveling. So I think it's part of that process of connecting them with the ocean or with that animal or that species and making it more personal and more fun. So that's definitely been really exciting, and it's I think a really great thing to be able to share with a classroom, to actually show them all of these different pings on a map and show them, hey, this was one sea turtle over a period of 3 months, you know, see how far they traveled and where are they spending their time. I think it's really fun to be able to share that kind of information more easily now with classrooms and teachers.
And so you've talked a lot about how there's a lot of pre-college education going into students, but are there programs or potentially programs for adults who are interested in learning this sort of stuff?
Yes, so there are programs out there for people that want to get research experience, or they might want to volunteer with different organizations so they can actually go travel and get experience doing that. Most of the time, they're going to charge you for those kinds of experiences, unfortunately. Otherwise, I think people would do that for their entire life all the time. But yeah, for us in particular, we don't have programs right now for adults, but something that we've started doing this past fall, we're actually doing socials for members in the local area. So that way they could see the kind of work that we're doing and the kind of impact that we're making in the local community, and they can get more involved through volunteer opportunities that we have.
I've had, I guess, knowing about the scientific community and stuff, and maybe you were talking about some tight budget things. If you could have just pick one thing out of the air that would help you get across what Ocean First Institute is trying to do, what would that be?
If I had to pick a word or a thing or...
Whatever you think is going to help you most.
Honestly, I think being able to just reach a larger audience. I think one of the challenges for us being in Colorado is that people don't always see the connection to the ocean. They may not understand why we would be an ocean conservation organization in the mountains of all places. But when we have conversations with people at community events, at schools, they always seem inspired and excited about the work that we're doing. And I think it's always a challenge trying to reach that audience and trying to get people to understand that connection and realize the importance of the ocean in our everyday life.
Along that same line, how does a nonprofit get some of this stuff? How do you guys get access to some of this technology, and how are you able to use it?
Yeah, so for our research projects that we do, when we need tags and things like that, you know, costs can obviously grow quickly. So we've been really fortunate to find incredible partners and to be able to receive grants from different organizations and find donors that support the work that we've done. We want to do even more, but we're about 2 years old now. We're still a young organization, and I'm so proud of the amount that we've been able to accomplish just in the first 2 years, and we're constantly growing and doing more. So that's just a matter of writing those grants and trying to find creative ways to raise funds for these programs that mean so much to us.
Just as a quick little side thing too, how does, for our listeners out there, how does a nonprofit function?
No, that's a really good question. So a lot goes into nonprofit management. Similar to a business, there's a lot of different things going on kind of behind the scenes. Everything from communication work, you know, running our social media accounts and our e-newsletter, to marketing. So creating flyers for upcoming events or a fundraiser or summer camps that are coming up. And then also grant writing is a really important part of it, or just raising funds so that the nonprofit can survive. And a lot of the times, it's not just for the programs that we're doing, it's also for all the administration and things like that. We're really fortunate that we're a very small organization, so we're able to do a lot with very little, and we're very proud of that. But yeah, and that doesn't include all the developing of the programs themselves, which is a lot of work, and running those programs, and then also trying to do these research projects. So we're doing a lot, and we're very proud of it. But running a nonprofit takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication to make it happen. But when you have passionate people together, you can do really amazing things.
You're listening to KGNU 88.5 FM, 1390 AM, Boulder, Denver, 98.7 FM in Fort Collins, 93.7 FM in Nederland, and online at kegnu.org and afterafm.com. Currently, you're listening to tonight's first Tech Talks Live episode, and you can find us every Friday morning here on KGNU at 8:25 AM. For those of you driving home currently, the current weather conditions are fair and 41 degrees. Look for a chance of snow overnight and through tomorrow. And enjoy the rest of the evening. And we're going to head right back here to this awesome interview with Lauren from Ocean First Institute, and from Stephen and Hannah, our co-host at the Innovation Center in St. Vrain Valley Schools in the IC Studios. And we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. We have Megan monitoring the phone here. She's a senior at Niwot High School, and we'd love to hear from you.
latest news and technology every Friday morning at 8:25 here at KGNU. Tech Talks is produced by students at the Innovation Center in Longmont and connects you to tech news locally and globally. That's Tech Talks, Friday mornings at 8:25 here at KGNU.
Okay, so since Ocean First Institute is only 2 years old, as it continues to grow, what would you like to see yourselves be able to do?
So one of our bigger goals, we would love a long-term kind of study site, which is something that we're currently working on and developing funding to run long-term studies and do research in one area for a long period of time. So we currently travel to a couple different places, and we love doing that and running our youth expeditions, but we want to expand our research program quite a bit. And for our programming that we run for our outreach, we would love to see our Ocean First Explorers Club continue to grow. We started in 2 high schools in the fall. We've added our 3rd one this spring, so that one's just beginning. And for our other programs that we have for younger students, we just want to see that continue to grow. And then that's something we're always working on this summer. For example, we're starting our very first summer camp. So we're going to have 3 weeks of summer camp, so we're really excited to do for the very first time. And just continuing to build new partnerships with schools and teachers, continuing to get our message out there, and partnering with other nonprofits that are doing really great work.
And with the research as well, is it mostly coastal research, or is there inland research to see how much effect there is from inland states on the ocean?
No, that's a really great question. So most of our research currently is done in coastal areas. So we're actually traveling to those places and doing the work there and bringing students with us so they can experience the ocean research firsthand. But what we're able to do now with these high school students, and we're hoping to grow that even to start working with college students sometime in the future, is actually, like you said, doing research locally, seeing how we're impacting the environment. What are we doing to our watershed, to our local rivers and creeks, and what that might mean for the ocean further downstream? And also doing certain types of research, like looking at how we can combat climate change. So what are some of the things that we can do as individuals and as organizations to make a difference? So looking at energy use, our waste management, those sorts of things. So with these local conservation projects that we've been able to start with local students, we're hoping to continue growing that and doing more and more research that the students are actually running themselves.
You can call us at 303-442-4242 if you have any other questions. Now, to shift tones just a little bit, we've been talking a lot about how technology's been helping and how it does a lot of good, but has advancing technology created more problems necessarily? I mean, have you guys run into some stuff where it's like,
Well, no, that's a really good question. I mean, I think technology can sometimes be a problem in terms of our ability to exploit the planet, how we can extract resources. So as we've made advances in technology, we're able to go further north, we're able to go deeper into our ocean and pull out more than what's sustainable. So unfortunately, technology may be able to do some good things, but we've done some damage to our planet because of that. And I think that technology can help us with addressing some of these issues, but at the same time, sometimes scientists worry that our dependence on technology could also be a bad thing. Sometimes when we're in a difficult situation and dealing with these complex problems, sometimes individuals might think that technology is a way of sort of getting us out of these situations, when in reality, if we were able to preserve our natural world, that would be able to help us even more.
And have you run into problems where people have tried to solve it with technology, but really the old way or the old-fashioned way of doing it has been a better solution?
Yes, so there is conflicting information on this, so it depends on who you talk to. But one example, just off the top of my head, is our bees. So a lot of people are aware that they're in trouble today, and their populations are declining all over the world. And so people are kind of looking into ways of how we can pollinate crops on our own, because we rely on them so heavily for this service, so that we can have food, so we can have our flowers, we can have all these amazing things. So for me, as a scientist, while that's trying to solve the problem that we're currently in, I think we're looking at it the wrong way, that we need to think about what is causing this decline in the first place, and how can we help bees and reestablish these natural populations that are healthy and growing. So that is just sort of my word of caution when relying on technology is, you know, the planet's been around for a really long time. We're kind of a recent addition to the planet, and it's evolved with these ecosystems are very complex, and we do not understand how everything works together. So we need to be really careful in trying to preserve our natural world as it is, instead of trying to try to come up with our own alternatives to fill these different roles that we might see that we're having issues with.
Going back to Ocean First Institute, do you know how it all started? Because you're part of Ocean First Institute, but that's a division of Ocean First, which is like a scuba shop, right?
Yes. So Ocean First is a dive shop in Boulder, and they do some incredible trips all over the world. If you're interested in getting scuba certified or are traveling with them, I highly recommend them. And they even have swim lessons and summer camps, marine science summer camps. It's a really great organization. And the owner of the dive shop, Graham Kasdan, he actually founded our nonprofit Ocean First Institute and worked with Dr. Mickey, our executive director, to actually form our nonprofit a little over 2 years ago.
So we're landlocked, but what is it that we can do to help our environment? I mean, it sounds like there could be a need and that you need to be careful. What can, you know, you do as an everyday citizen to maybe help that along?
That's a very good question, and there are a lot of things that we can all be doing. And I think just in general, being more aware of how we impact the environment and thinking about how your daily choices and how we live our life can mean something for the natural world. So for me, one of the things that I talk to students about is the waste that we produce. So looking at the things that we use every single day and how many of those items are a single use item, something like a plastic straw or a water bottle, and that we just throw it away afterwards. So a lot of people will say that they recycle, and that is wonderful, and we want to continue doing that. But ultimately, it's this world of consuming too much that we live in that we need to address. It's not about continuing to use everything that we continue to use, but rather thinking about ways that we can have reusable items or things that last longer. So in investing in things that we can reuse over and over again. So plastic pollution is one of the most serious issues facing our ocean today and our planet. So for me, that's been a major message that we try to teach in all of our different programs that we have.
This is not just in Colorado. This is not only in the United States, this is a worldwide thing that you're trying to get out. And that, does it make it hard being necessarily a smaller company, or?
Well, for me, I think when you get into conservation, it can seem overwhelming and seem like a big obstacle that you have to go out and save the world. But when really, I think one of the most successful efforts and organizations that we've had start small and spread that way and work with local communities and schools to do something and make a difference. So I think if you're able to reach one person, you know, every day, you're making a difference. It adds up. So it can be challenging when you talk to people about pollution and they're inland and they don't see that connection. It's, you know, if I were to throw a cigarette butt outside, it's It's not going to harm a sea turtle. But in reality, those different types of products, especially things made out of plastic, unfortunately travel very easily. And if they get into waterways, they can travel very long distance, even all the way to our ocean. And they stay around for a very long time in our environment, and they do break down over time, but they never go away. They stay as microplastics in our environment. And unfortunately, most of the fish that we eat today, even here in Colorado, anywhere along the coast, they're actually going to have those things inside them. So it's part of this now in our food cycle, unfortunately. So it impacts everybody, whether you're on the coast, you're up in the mountains, anywhere in the world, there's really no place in our ocean that's untouched by humankind.
And so along with the plastic pollution, what would you say are some of the most serious issues that the ocean is facing right now?
So in addition to our pollution issue, climate change is also a very serious issue. So our oceans are warming. People can see this even here in Colorado with increase in wildfires and things like that. People know that this is happening around the world. And unfortunately, due to increases in greenhouse gases and things like carbon dioxide, ocean acidification is becoming an issue for things like coral reefs, which cover 2% of our ocean, but house 25% of all marine life in our ocean. So we do not fully understand how things are going to respond and the kind of damage that we're inflicting on our ocean today. But sea level rise is also another issue for places along the coast, for ecosystems like mangroves. And I would also say that unsustainable fishing is a serious problem today. So not just things like shark fin soup, which are decimating our shark populations around the world, but also things like bycatch. So we're pulling out these fish populations at an unsustainable rate, but we're also catching things that we're not even intentionally trying to catch. So we are working to try to fix this. You know, scientists and fishermen have worked together to create things like the TED, which is the turtle excluder device. So it's about 97% effective, adding a little door on the net for any large animals that get caught into nets. You can save a lot of animals that way. So while there are all these depressing things, I want you guys to know that there are scientists and organizations working all over the world to try to make a difference, and including research and organizations like us. So like I said before, it's not just about going out and studying these animals, getting baseline information, figuring out where they're spending their time, figuring out where we need to protect them, but also creating that awareness. So that education piece is so important, not just for our for politicians, but for everybody to understand so that they care and that they try to make a difference.
So, believe it or not, it sounds like we don't know everything about the oceans. How important do you think a company like Ocean First, Ocean First Institute, and that even just that whole educational piece that you were talking about is to something that can be considered a very monumental problem?
Well, that's why I think we're so important, is because I think for a lot of people, you know, adults and youth alike, I think they know that climate change is happening, but what are they going to do about it? It is such an overwhelming global issue. How can you possibly make a difference? It's easier just to kind of continue on your day and not worry about something like that. I know as a conservation biologist, it can be overwhelming, worrying, and no, being aware of all these things. It can be very frustrating. But I think that's why we're needed. I think it's really important to have that positive, hopeful story out there to show people what is being done to make a difference, to inspire them to join these organizations or to make that small change towards helping the environment. And that's a big part of what we're doing, is putting that positive message out there, but also to teach them about what are those things that they can do, whether that's volunteering within an organization or those everythings in their everyday lives that they can start to slowly change, so that way they can feel like they're making a positive contribution and that they're positively impacting the environment.
And so, with individuals just helping the world, how is there a way, or is there a way, really, that individuals could help support Ocean First Institute so you guys can continue your research and continue growing?
Absolutely. So we're always looking for volunteers. We've had volunteers in elementary school through retirees of all ages and experiences. So you don't necessarily have to be a scientist or a teacher to volunteer with us. We just want you to have a passion for our ocean and protecting it. So we work with people all the time to help us run programs, to help us with our communication work, helping us writing blogs, all kinds of unique experiences for volunteers. And we're always obviously looking for people that want to support our programs. So we are currently running a fundraiser on Facebook right now to help raise funds for our Explorers Club program. So people are welcome to check out our Facebook page and check out some of the work that we're doing. And also, please feel free to check out our website. It's oceanfirstinstitute.org, and you can see some of the programs that we have, and you can actually donate right there on our website.
Okay, so you guys really kind of, as just, we're going towards a final thought here of Ocean First Institute and what you do personally, and that is, maybe I keep getting the idea of facilitating change. I mean, it comes full circle back with education. It comes full circle back with, I mean, just telling anyone what you know and what more you can do. What, like, what do you think is your message to Ocean First, and what do you think your message is to maybe everyone who's listening to the world about the importance of what you're doing?
Well, I think protecting our natural world is something that everybody should care about, and especially our ocean. Without a healthy ocean, we can't have a healthy planet. So I think it's really important for people to start to realize that our ocean determines a healthy planet, and that we need to care about how we're impacting our neighboring communities and how we're impacting people downstream from us, and to really feel like we are part of a greater community and to be more active citizens. You know, I think there are things that we can do in our individual everyday lives, and there are things that we can do as a community to work together to make things better. So if you are interested in, you know, getting involved, volunteer with organizations that are doing work that you care about. There's so many things out there that we can be doing. And I want to encourage people to, while it can be discouraging, to not give up. I know we're living in a very difficult time right now. And, you know, sometimes talking with students, I can see them being sad, thinking about all these things that are happening in our world today. But there are so many people that are passionate about what they do, that have dedicated their lives to making the world a better place. And I think that surrounding yourself with people like that and being aware of these things that are happening is really important, to focus on those hopeful things that are happening and to not give up no matter what. Our planet is worth it. We are worth it. And you really, truly can make a difference. Ava, every small thing that everybody does, no matter where you live, if you're in the mountains, if you're along the coast, no matter your age, you really can do something to make a difference.
We have a quick teacher on the phone who wants to connect here. So what, Cynthia, tell us a little bit, like, what's your question?
Well, I have a question about, I'm an elementary school teacher. And it would be, I want to know, how do we connect to her outreach programs? It would be, that would fit right in. I'm a science teacher, so some of those programs would be really interesting for our students. And I was interested in seeing, how do we connect with her, and how do they set up times when they meet with these students?
Well, thank you so much for calling, Cynthia, and thank you for what you do. You teachers are out on the front lines, inspiring our students of today and our future generations. So thank you for what you do. If you're interested in having us come to visit the school, we have a variety of programs. Our virtual outreach programs are available, and then we also do visits for local schools. So if that's something that you would be interested in doing, we have a variety of different programs. Please feel free to check out our website. And you can also send me an email at info at oceanfirstinstitute.org. And I would be more than happy to help you out and to connect with you. We're always looking for new schools and incredible teachers to partner up with.
Okay, well, that sounds great. So it's online. We can look online. And then I'll shoot you an email, and maybe we can figure out we're in Longmont. So.
Oh, yes, we work in Longmont all the time. So, yeah, we'd be happy to connect.
I think the kids would be. This sounds really exciting for the kids.
Okay, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for calling. I'm excited to hear from you.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have another caller here. What's your question for us?
Hey, so I was really curious about ocean acidification, specifically within the kelp forest. I know that this is like not as relevant to Colorado, but it's definitely a big issue on the coast. And my friend and I go scuba diving a lot, and we've noticed like some of the coral reefs are being destroyed, and just sort of ways that we can protect the ocean and help with these issues surrounding like waters and coral reefs.
No, that's a really great question, and that's why this can sometimes be overwhelming when you see these things happening. Like, okay, how do I fix the planet? How do I make this better? So for coral in particular and coastal areas, so some of the things that we can do to help them out is keeping that water as clean as possible. So some of the things that have been developed in recent years are actually coral-safe sunscreens and things like that. So a lot of times people don't think about what might be on their skin could potentially impact coral. Or if I'm not on the coast, anything that I put down the drain isn't going to impact them at all. So thinking about those things that we either put on our skin or we put down the drain, always trying to make sure that they're as natural as possible can really help. And then when you're talking about something like ocean acidification, so that has to deal more with our carbon footprint. So one of the biggest things that we can do that's not easy for everybody to do, we can't, is really our driving, how much we drive. And I know not everybody can go out and get an electric car tomorrow. I know everybody wishes they might be able to do that. But making that choice to walk when you can, to bike ride when you can, whatever you can to do, ride the bus when you can. All those little things do make a difference. And especially for reducing the carbon footprint, there's a lot of really unique things that we can do. Everything from trying out a meatless Monday, things like that. Reducing the amount of meat we consume, people don't realize that can actually reduce our carbon footprint. So it's not just about making sure we turn the lights off when we're done and trying to reduce our energy use, but there's other really creative things that we can do, including having those reusable items. So I mentioned that before. And if we're not constantly creating new materials, we're actually benefiting the environment that way. So even having a water bottle that you reuse or a bag, that can actually help coral. So there's quite a bit that we can do.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. And that's really nice to know that, like, there are some definitely really practical ways that we can help the environment, and especially the ocean. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling.
So to wrap up on kind of the last here 10-ish minutes, do we have any final thoughts as far as Ocean First Institute, what you guys do? I think it's really cool to hear all of this stuff that you're doing. Like, I had no idea that Ocean First was even part of Colorado. We're a landlocked state, you know, an ocean play. That's the last thing that comes to mind. But do you guys have any, like, just final thoughts, any final parting words as far as anything?
Well, no, I thank you guys so much for having us on today. I really appreciate you giving us the time to get our message out there and to talk about the ocean here.
Thank you for being on.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I encourage everybody to just think about how your actions impact the environment, every little day things. And I know I've said this before, it can seem overwhelming or that you're just one person and it may not make a difference, but it really does. I can't tell you how many people that I've inspired, just family members or friends, and not me constantly lecturing them or bothering them every day, but just seeing how I live my life and the things that I'm passionate about. It really is contagious. So really kind of setting that example for the people in your life and for students and your children, it really does matter. And to get involved. So find organizations that you're passionate about that are making a difference, you know, locally or for our oceans or both, and try to get involved. It really can make a difference.
One of the most, I think, and just to home back to one of the most important points that I think you made too, was that that whole education aspect, you know, that's where this is all going to start. That's where people like me, like Hannah, like anyone is going to start to really learn about this stuff. And the fact that you're doing all of this really interesting technology, the virtual reality stuff that literally came out almost just like a year ago, is absolutely incredible. And it's cool too, you're a nonprofit, you guys do all of this stuff. It's been incredible to honestly hear about that stuff. Do you, as kind of a parting question, do you have a vision for where you want to be in the next, let's say, 2 years?
As an organization or myself?
let's I think just as yourself, because we hear kind of that organization, you don't have to speak for them, but maybe what you see yourself trying to help do in your community.
Yeah, honest, I want to continue helping Ocean First Institute grow. And I want to continue building partnerships with local schools, with local government officials, and really getting more involved and sort of tackling on bigger and bigger projects and kind of showing individuals in the local area all the kind of things that we can do. And I just want to continue doing that work. I want to continue learning every single day. I'm still learning. I've been going to school. I can't tell you how many years of schooling I went through, and I'm still learning all the time. Whether that's just, I want to continue being a better speaker, a better writer, everything, and just keep inspiring students and other people and keep getting that message across. So I hope to also travel some more. I've been in Colorado about 2 years now. I absolutely love it. And I haven't been diving in quite a while. So I want to fix that. I need to work on that. So definitely traveling some more in the nonprofit world. And I know in a lot of different professions, sometimes I know we can work too much and forget to take care of ourselves. So I think working in this field in particular, you can feel a drain sometimes. So I think it's important to get out there and see that world that you're protecting. So going hiking out in the mountains or going snorkeling, all those kinds of things. So that's something that I'm always trying to do and focus on. And I want to get better at that in the next 2 years for sure. And to try to visit the ocean as often as I can, to just kind of go say hi and really truly remember, you know, why it is what we're doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's important about the ocean and what's important about what we do every day, because in the end of it is a radio show and we're sitting here and we're talking, but at the same time there's stuff that you can go out and do, and that's what I really find cool about your guys' organization again, and just seeing the education, the strides that you guys are making. And I'm excited to hear soon, and very soon, like what you guys are going to be do. So thank you so much, Lauren, for joining us. If you guys have any questions, if you have any tech questions, or if you have anything else, you can check out me and Hannah's part at innovation.svvsd.org. We are part of the St. Vrain Valley Schools Innovation Center there. This is where we're coming to. And we also do produce the show Tech Talks from there.
Yeah, we'd like to thank you, Lauren, for coming in and joining us this evening. Thanks, Steve and Hannah, for hosting your first live show. Again, join us tomorrow morning at 8:25 a.m. For our Tech Talks show that you can find weekly. Next week, I think we're going to have a great theme. We have one of our students at the inauguration gathering voices tomorrow, and we're going to do a roundtable next week talking about technology and its impact on the election as far as the post-election and the inauguration. Stephen, Hannah, Megan, Jillian, Lily, and Genesis all work very hard to produce this show weekly. We really appreciate KGNU allowing us to have this first live show. The high school students produced this entire show themselves. And we're going to be turning this over here in this next hour to Highway 322 with Ginger. It's an awesome show we want you to stay and listen to. And as you're listening to her amazing production this evening, we'd also like you to consider some of the things that Lauren shared with us and the students and find out how you can become active in helping our environment and how you're impacting the oceans, even though we're all the way here in the middle of Colorado. You are listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins, and we want to thank you for your time. Thanks, Hannah, Lauren, Steve. Any last words before we cue it out?
Thanks for the call-ins. Thanks for everyone who's listening.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today. I had a lot of fun.